She told everyone she was a virgin, pure, devout, untouched, and they believed her. From the moment she entered the gated world of high society, Noelle struck like a whisper in silk. To men, she was temptation cloaked in innocence. To women, she was harmless, until their husbands stopped coming home. One by one, she seduced the powerful and the weak, not with overt sexuality, but with carefully crafted suggestion, a lingering glance, a tear at the right moment, a lie whispered in the dark. And once she had them, she didn't ask for love. She demanded silence. Noelle built her empire not with money or muscle, but with secrets, a senator's affair, a tech CEO's abortion bribe, a socialite's missing child. She wasn't after fame, she was after leverage. And if you dared to expose her, she'd already made sure you'd go down first. But behind every blackmail note and every suicide was a deeper mystery. Who was Noelle really? And why did she need so many people to suffer just to survive? So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Virgin Who Watched Everything. Bern. Noelle Devereaux arrived at the Westmont Foundation Gala in a borrowed dress and a pair of scuffed white flats that made her look more like a debutante's assistant than a guest. The dress, cream-colored and lace-trimmed, whispered of modesty. Her hair was pulled into a soft braid that crowned her head like a nun's halo. Noelle didn't enter like a woman who wanted attention. She entered like one who expected none. And that's exactly why every man noticed her. By the end of the night, she'd spoken to three board members, dined beside the mayor's wife, and convinced Diane Westmont, the grieving widow and society patron behind the gala, to invite her to Montauk for the weekend. She told Diane she had grown up in a convent school in Quebec, that she'd lost her mother to cancer and never knew her father, that she wanted to help women reclaim their power. Her voice was delicate, her accent vaguely European. Every story she told was rehearsed, but not robotic. She knew how to tremble at the right word, how to pause just long enough for the other person to fill in the blanks she never actually said, and she ended every conversation the same way, by touching her chest gently and whispering, "I've never even had a real boyfriend. The sisters said I should wait for love." That was the line that got them every time. The moment she became a puzzle, they wanted to solve. Noelle understood something most people never would. When you look like a lamb, people hand you the keys to the slaughterhouse. The weekend at Montauk was supposed to be a quiet one. Diane Westmont, in her 60s, was known for her pearl necklaces, her estate fundraisers, and her habit of adopting lost girls into her social world. But she had no idea the wolf she'd just let inside. By the second night, Noelle had learned the names of Diane's real estate contacts, her personal chef, and the woman who cleaned her closet every Wednesday. She also learned that Diane's 24-year-old son, Zachary, had recently returned from Europe after a spiritual awakening. Noelle casually asked about him while sipping tea in the sunroom. "Oh, Zachary?" Diane had laughed. "A walking existential crisis. You'll meet him." She did. And when she did, she wept in front of him. They met in the garden on a warm Saturday evening. She was reading a book she had never actually opened, sitting alone on a bench. Zach approached, curious. Noelle looked up slowly, as if startled, then smiled like he had caught her crying. She didn't speak for the first few minutes. She just looked away, blinked, and dabbed her eyes. When he finally asked if she was okay, she said, "Sometimes I remember things I shouldn't. I'm sorry, that's so weird." She never told him what the memory was. She didn't need to. He filled it in himself. By Monday, he was in love. By Wednesday, he was begging her to stay in the guest house. By Friday, she took a selfie with his sleeping body in bed behind her, and a screenshot of a message he had sent, "I'd give up everything to protect you." She sent both to Diane, along with a note. "I think Zach deserves to be honest with you. If not, maybe this will help." Within 2 hours, the Devereaux Foundation received a $25,000 anonymous donation from Diane's accountant. A few weeks later, she was invited to host a panel on youth trauma recovery at a wellness summit in Aspen, sponsored by the Westmont family. There was no such foundation, Noelle had never been to Quebec. The convent story was a lie, but none of it mattered. What mattered was how quickly rich people would sell their souls to protect a name. By fall, Noelle had inserted herself into the city's tightest social circles. She used charity events as hunting grounds. She dressed modestly, spoke sparingly, and always wore a delicate gold cross around her neck. Her modesty disarmed women. Her smile intoxicated men. She never made overt advances. She waited for the weak ones to approach. And she always gave them just enough rope to hang themselves. Her relationships were short, fleeting, but always well documented. Noelle carried a sleek black moleskin notebook with her everywhere. People assumed she was journaling. In reality, she recorded everything. Names, dates, offhand confessions. She took photos while pretending to take selfies. She placed her phone in speaker mode during conversations and left it recording on tables. She once got a senator's son to admit, drunk and on camera, that he'd paid for an underage girl's abortion. He now funded her scholarship program to the tune of $10,000 a month. Noelle wasn't interested in love. She was interested in control. Every lie was leverage. Every secret was a step up the ladder. By Christmas, she had 4 phones, 2 apartments, and a dedicated lawyer on retainer, paid by a hedge fund executive who thought she was pregnant with his child. She wasn't. Then came Elise Rowland. Elise was the second wife of Turner Rowland, a media mogul in his late 60s who treated his younger wife more like a trophy than a partner. Elise was smart, educated, and known for her philanthropy work with abused women. She had built her identity around being a survivor. When she met Noelle at a museum gala, she was immediately charmed. Noelle cried when she spoke about trauma. She quoted scripture when asked about forgiveness. She talked about growing up, isolated and afraid, and finding God in silence. Elise called her a revelation. They lunched together. Elise took her shopping. She introduced Noelle to her therapist and even confided in her about her insecurities. What she didn't know was that Turner was already sleeping with Noelle by that point, and Noelle had already recorded it, not just the sex, the conversations. Turner joked about settling harassment lawsuits. He bragged about NDAs. He offered to help Noelle disappear if she ever got in trouble. He said he liked her because, you know how to play scared. The recordings landed in Elise's inbox one Thursday afternoon. By Sunday, Elise was found dead in her home. The coroner called it suicide. The press called it tragic. Noelle attended the funeral in a modest black dress, cried through the entire eulogy, and kissed Turner's cheek at the reception. She left with a signed check for $50,000, disguised as a donation. The obituary didn't mention her. But Elise's brother remembered her face. Dr. Sebastian Klein was not the type to get emotional. As a trauma surgeon, he had learned to compartmentalize pain. But Elise's death had left him shaken. They'd been estranged for years, but she was still his baby sister. When he reviewed the police report, something didn't sit right. The timing, the emails, the anonymous note she received days before her death that simply read, "You deserve the truth." He started digging. He pulled call logs, traced burner numbers, hacked Elise's cloud. He found photos, voice memos, even journal entries Elise had never shared. And the name that kept appearing? Noelle Devereaux. He confronted Turner. The man looked like a ghost, denied everything. Sebastian didn't believe him. He searched charity databases, found no registration for the Devereaux Foundation. He requested public financial records. None existed. The address listed for the charity was a closed-down florist. He watched Noelle speak at a women's luncheon weeks later. He stood in the back of the hotel ballroom and listened as she cried about redemption and forgiveness. When she left the stage, he followed her into the hallway and said quietly, "Your mask is slipping." Noelle turned slowly, smiled. "I'm sorry. Have we met?" "You told my sister to hang herself," he said. She didn't flinch. "I think you're confusing me with someone else." He stared at her. "I see it in trauma victims, the way they edit their stories. You're not protecting pain. You're protecting leverage." Noelle's lips parted, but no words came. Sebastian leaned in, closer. "I know who you are. I know what you've done. And I'm going to rip the lie out from under your feet." She tilted her head. You'd be surprised what people are willing to believe when you look like me. Then she walked away. That night, Noelle reviewed every backup file, every insurance policy, every leverage document she had saved over the past 2 years. She wasn't scared. She was calculating. Because Sebastian Klein was dangerous, but also emotional. And emotion made people predictable. She opened her laptop and began drafting a plan. She would confess, but not the truth. She'd tell the world just enough to make them pity her, and then she'd take the story back. Because in a world obsessed with scandal, the best way to control the narrative was to write it yourself. Chapter 2. Her innocence was the deadliest lie of all. Noelle sat in front of her phone, ring light blazing, makeup minimal, expression tender. The caption of her live stream was already drawing viewers in. There's something I need to say. I can't hide anymore. It was perfect. The framing was simple. A pale, trembling girl with a soft halo of light behind her. No filter. No tears yet. Just the unbearable burden of a survivor on the edge of confession. Within 5 minutes, over 40,000 people had tuned in. 10 minutes later, it passed 300,000. She began with silence. Then a breath. I've lied. Her voice cracked on cue. Not too much. Just enough to feel raw. People think I'm something I'm not. They think I'm a fraud, a manipulator. And maybe that's not entirely wrong. She lowered her gaze, let the chat light up with, "We love you," and "You're so brave." I did things I'm not proud of. I let people believe I was pure, untouched, innocent. I told stories. I wore a cross I never earned. Another pause, but I did it, because I was scared. Now came the genius. I've been used, abused, silenced. I came from nothing. I learned that power protects itself, and the only way to survive in their world is to become what they fear. So yes, I used their secrets, because they used mine first. Not a name was spoken, not a crime confessed. But the implication was thunderous. She was the real victim. By the 20-minute mark, she was crying. By the 30-minute mark, she had become a viral symbol of misunderstood women. What no one saw, what they couldn't possibly have known, was the hidden camera Sebastian Klein had planted in the hotel suite 2 hours earlier. It recorded everything. The assistant rehearsing Noelle's lines with her, the false tears practiced in the mirror, the strategic placement of tissues and soft lighting, the complete absence of sincerity. Sebastian didn't hack her. He didn't confront her. He didn't leak rumors. He waited. And when her live stream was picked up by morning shows, online magazines, and feminist blogs, he dropped the real footage. The internet turns. The unedited behind-the-scenes video landed on Reddit first, then TikTok. Then it exploded. Noelle rehearsing the line, "I wore a cross I never earned," over and over again. Her handler reminding her to look left when talking about pain. Her pausing to reapply eyedrops between takes. The raw truth hit like a hurricane. The caption that accompanied the leaked video was simple. She played you. All of you. Overnight, the tide turned. People who had just called her brave were now calling her sociopathic. The same influencers who posted Jack Noel survived deleted their stories in shame. Interviews were cancelled. A book deal collapsed. A senator distanced himself publicly. But the damage had already been done. To them. Noelle hadn't just manipulated individuals, she had manipulated the public, and now the public wanted blood, backlash, and silence. Within a week, Noelle was doxxed. Her real name? Not Noelle. Her accent? Fake. The Devereux Foundation? Never registered. A thread on X, formerly Twitter, compiled over 40 lies, each backed by clips and documents. Her father didn't die of cancer. He lived in New Jersey and hadn't spoken to her in years. The convent school, fabricated. Her high school diploma was forged. At 17, she had been expelled from a prep school for blackmailing a teacher. The most damning part? The pregnancy she used to extort a hedge fund executive. The ultrasound photo had been lifted from Google. The timeline didn't match. She had never been pregnant at all. By then, she was in hiding. Her Montauk guest house was abandoned. The burner phones disconnected. A tabloid published grainy images of a woman believed to be Noelle boarding a flight to Mexico City under a false passport, but Sebastian wasn't done. The lawsuit's begin Turner Rowland was the first to fall. Sebastian turned over the unedited audio recordings to a civil attorney. Elise Rowland's estate filed a wrongful death suit. The audio of Turner laughing about NDAs and buying silence became Exhibit A. Two other women came forward, both former assistants, both under gag orders. One alleged sexual coercion. Another claimed hush money was offered after an assault. Noelle wasn't on trial, but her fingerprints were on every piece of evidence. It was her tapes, her photos, her threats, her notes to self that included damning details. Turner settled quietly. His company was gutted. The Senator Noelle had manipulated into funding her fake nonprofit resigned. Anonymous donations stopped. One board member at the Westmont Foundation overdosed weeks after the scandal broke. None of it was tied directly to Noelle, but the destruction followed her like a scent. A new face in an old city. 1 year later, in Buenos Aires, a woman named Isabel Roux checked into a boutique hotel using a Belgian passport. She spoke flawless French, wore modest dresses, carried a small crucifix in her purse. She spent her days at libraries and cafes, her nights at quiet lounges, never the same one twice. She was beautiful. She was mysterious. She was polite, and she had already started collecting secrets. By the third month, the hotel manager, a married father of three, began leaving her gifts at the front desk. A week later, she had keys to his office. The week after that, she had access to the hotel's guest registry. One of the guests on the list was a wealthy tech investor from New York, traveling alone. She booked a room across from his, introduced herself as a language student, mentioned that she once lived in Canada, asked if he believed in forgiveness. Within 2 weeks, she had him confessing to a sexual harassment cover-up from 2016. 3 days later, he wired $35,000 to a scholarship fund in her name. The email receipt, filed under a folder labeled Protection. The name on the account, Devereux Global Trust. Back in the States, a book is written. Sebastian Klein never gave interviews. He declined documentary offers. He turned down speaking, engagements. But he did write one thing. A private manuscript titled The Lie Wore White. In it, he documented every step of Noelle's rise and fall. Names, dates, psychological profiles. He outlined her tactics with surgical precision. The false trauma, the calculated virginity, the power of silence, the weaponization of pity. He described how the myth of innocence protected her, how purity became a currency, and how society is often more outraged by a woman pretending to be a victim than it is about the systems that enable real ones to be silenced. He ended the manuscript with one haunting sentence. She never needed to hurt anyone. She just knew we would protect her as long as she looked harmless. The book was never published, but a digital copy leaked. It spread like wildfire on the dark web, feminist forums, red pill podcasts, and true crime subreddits. Some called Noelle a monster. Others called her a mirror. Final sightings. Myth or manipulator. To this day, Noelle Devereux is an urban legend. People claim to see her in Paris, Istanbul, Cartagena. A man in Rome swore she seduced his brother into signing over their family villa. A politician in South Africa hinted at a pale woman with a church smile who blackmailed him into stepping down. No one has concrete proof. Only whispers. Only wreckage. Some believe she died, that she took her own life once the world turned. But others know better. They know that in a world addicted to performance, the most powerful lie isn't the one shouted, it's the one whispered. The softest voice in the loudest room. The tear on an untouched cheek. The virgin who watched everything burn and walked away without a scratch.